Okay, we can get into the next part. So that is the Dhamma sermon. Let me share the screen. We were discussing Mangala Sutta, or sometimes called as Mahamangala Sutta, which is a very familiar sutta and one of the popular suttas among the Buddhists because it is considered as kind of an auspicious, a blissful or blessing, blissful sutta. There are various deep causes are mentioned, how one's life would be successful or how one's life would be blissful. So basically, a certain occasion, so people and the devas were wondering what is really a blessing. So at that time, ultimately the question came to the Buddha. So actually the Buddha didn't go to any sort of a superstitious kind of approach. Rather, his approach was very practical. So all the reasons how one can become, how one's life becomes successful, or how one's engagement become more blissful, a blessing, is very much explained here, very basically based on the some practical points. So we were discussing this for several weeks now. Now almost we have come to the end of the sutta. And let's see what is available for us. So the next verse listed is Kanti cha sova chasata samanananta dasana kalena dhamma sakaccha etam mangala muttama. Kanti, so this is the patience. Sova chasata, so easy to advise, or one is capable of hearing someone else's or listening to someone else's advices. Samanananta dasana, seeing the ascetics. Kalina dhamma sakaccha, and doing various dhamma discussions at proper times. And etam mangala muttamang, this is a blessing. So we can see certain things. Actually, when we consider from the practical point of view, kanti, that is the maintaining patience, is actually Buddha mentioned one of the good qualities we have to have even in the higher practice. Even when one is more concerned about reducing of one's defilements, reducing one's influxes, asavas, Buddha mentioned what we call as the Kanti Sangvara, where one is maintaining certain amount of patience during the difficult times, difficult moments, or with difficult people, difficult situations. Now, sometimes when we are meditating, there are certain situations, various painful feelings are arising, and sometimes certain disturbing sounds are happening, and the environment is not that supportive, and the very body is not that supportive. So likewise, various obstacles can come our way. So even at that time, without giving up the practice, so maintaining it, encouraging us, enduring that, is one of the very, very important point, because otherwise we simply give it up. Because we don't know that what is line up for our life. So various difficulties, difficult situations or obstacles, may diseases. So likewise, many things would be available, but having certain amount of patience is a must, because otherwise if we are impatient, if we are anxious, doing things in a rush, then sometimes we mess up the whole thing. So that's why Kanti Paramang Tapo Titikka. So Buddha mentioned patience is the most important austere practice. Especially when we are continuing our spiritual path, so we can't expect immediate results. Probably we may be practicing for several years, but sometimes it may not produce tangible results as quickly as we want. So sometimes it is discouraging, and even though we do diligent practice, still nothing tangible is available sometimes. And we expect a lot of things from the practice, but that is nothing much we gain. So that kind of an attitude sometimes causing us to leave the practice or look at for something else or getting disheartened. So those things are possible. But maintaining the practice, continuing the practice wholeheartedly, patiently is one of the very important key thing, because it is not that every day we may be experiencing certain blissful and fantastic experiences, but there may be certain situations the whole practice is quite bored. Because typically our minds are fairly conditioned, expecting certain amount of excitement, elations, bliss, etc., etc. But normally, as we continue the practice, so those excitements become less and less, those ripples become less and less, rather the practice will become more peaceful, smooth. At that time, our mind might interpret it as bored, or kind of a boredom, a kind of a monotony. At that time, if we are impatient, then we may even quit the practice. So on those occasions, actually, we need to have a fair amount of patience even to bear this boredom, even to keep going, not to give up. Even though the practice is not that beautiful, just to continue. So likewise, in the spiritual practice, this patience is very, very important part. And particularly when we are having a lot of expectations, so that would even give a negative impact to our practice. So rather than having so many expectations, just continuing the practice patiently is very, very important. And again, throughout our lives, sometimes as children, probably our parents are advising us, our teachers are advising us, our elders are advising us. So probably we may be able to listen to them because we have certain respect towards them. But as we become adults, so that attitude slowly change. So we become somewhat fixated. We become somewhat, sometimes a little stubborn, so that others can't advise us. Others can't even approach us. We simply ignore them. We don't care about them. We ignore their words. We ignore their advices. Because we think sometimes we know. We think that I am the best. We think that who are they for them? Who are they to advise me? So likewise, various arrogant, stubborn attitudes can develop within us as we become grow, as we become adults. So that is something that we have to be careful. So in a way, mindfulness practice helps us to recognize these attitudes within us. So am I getting humble? Am I getting more flexible? Or am I getting stubborn, arrogant? So the one quality Buddha mentioned as a blessing is called sovacchassata, amenable to advice. So when someone has noticed certain fault in us, a certain mistake in us, are we amenable to advice? Are we approachable? Or they simply never come to us, never tell us, never mention it to us, because they understood that there is no point of talking to us. So actually that is a great loss to us, a great loss to us. Actually, Buddha mentioned sometimes he ignores certain monks, he give up certain monks because he understood that no point of advising to them. It is very much like a death to them. Because Buddha also has given up. So Buddha has given up correcting them, advising them. So that's a great loss to them. So similarly for us, if Kalyana Mitras give up their hopes on us, they don't approach us, they don't want to talk to us, they don't want to advise us or guide us, so that's a great loss to us. It might happen due to various causes, maybe our pride, maybe our stubbornness, or maybe our conceit. So many reasons it may be. So it's a great loss to us. But on the other hand, if we are approachable, and if we are ready to listen to the others, And if we are ready to have an introspection and recognize our own faults, and again, when someone indicates that, so we have a gratitude towards them, we respect that, we respect their advice, we respect their concern. So if that is the case, then actually there is an opportunity for the growth. Because sometimes our own faults, it's very difficult to recognize by ourselves, but the others may be able to recognize. But if we are not amenable to advice, then they simply ignore that. They allow us to simply get ruined, simply get further, get into a downfall, because we are not approachable. We are not amenable to advice. So that's a great loss. That is something that as adults, we need to be careful. We need to see as our character, as our lifestyle, are the others good people are approaching to us? Are they recognize ourselves as a person who is easy to talk, easy to address, amenable to advice? Or have they simply neglect us because they found that we are not so? So having that amenable to advice, so that sort of an attitude, an approachable attitude, is something that we have to develop, and there Buddha mentioned it is a blessing. Because we can quickly recover from our faults, we can quickly recognize our faults. Others, good people, may feel that they can help us. Samananancha dasana. And when we recognize some good monks or good people, some spiritual characters, they are inspiring. They are showing us a different path, not always going after sensual gratification, but giving an alternative approaches and with a lot of wisdom. So they are actually seeing them even is a great blessing. So that's why sometimes when we even recognize their characters, or we simply read their characters, or we simply reflect their good qualities, that is giving us a lot of encouragement. That is giving us a lot of a blessing. That is giving us a lot of joy. So that's why certain meditation techniques like Buddha Anusati, Sangha Anusati. So when we do recognize Buddha's good qualities, actually it gives giving us a lot of happiness within to our hearts, to our heart. And again, when we recite or understand the good qualities of the Sangha, that is also a blessing, where it becomes a refuge. And we also want to inculcate those or cultivate those good qualities, because our mind is also yearning for that kind of a good quality. So we have that kind of a potential, or we have that kind of a tendency. As we associate, as we appreciate another good person, so automatically that good qualities also start embedding to our heart, appreciating within ourselves, and then slowly, slowly, those good qualities are slowly coming and planted within our hearts. And Kalina Dhamma Sakaccha, and continuing one's practice and involving in good Dhamma discussion, that is actually helpful. Yeah, sometimes with the mention as Sakaccha Anugahita, a support of the Dhamma discussion. Because sometimes we don't know whether our understanding is correct, or we misunderstood the action or the decision that we have taken is correct. So on such occasions, if we are having any kind of a perplexity, any kind of a doubt, it is necessary to discuss with another person, have an open discussion. So that is very important thing, particularly the Dhamma discussion. Because then many others also can contribute, and probably they have seen certain sites that we didn't notice. So as a result of that, we may start appreciating the Dhamma, because many people have many different angles, viewpoints, and they can contribute in many different ways. And ultimately, we are growing in that multitude. We are growing in that very rich environment, because people are discussing, people are having their different views about the Dhamma, but according to the Dhamma, appreciating Dhamma, and sharing various insights. So that is also a very good opportunity for us to grow, because it is quite difficult for us to practice alone every day. We need certain kind of an encouragement. So that's a very interesting example made by three arahants. Actually, before they become arahants, they were practicing ardently. Venerable Ananda, Venerable Kimbila, and Venerable Nandiya. And Buddha approached them once. So once Buddha approached there, so they explain how they are helping each other, how they are practicing, and particularly how they are maintaining noble silence. For 14 days, they are maintaining noble silence, or I think 5 days, they are maintaining noble silence. And the 6th day, they are having the Dhamma discussion. Again, 5 days, noble silence. Again, the next day, a Dhamma discussion. So likewise, it's a very refreshing experience, because it is not that the continuously one is maintaining silence, rather a very good companionship, a very good discussion. Dhamma discussion is always refreshing, always encouraging, always removing all our various doubts. And then it is encouraging us to continue the practice wholeheartedly, because we are quite sure there were these doubts, there were difficulties, but we were able to sort them out during the discussion. So that is also a blessing according to the Buddha. And then the next verse, Tapocha Brahmacharyancha Arya Satchana Dasana Nibbana Satchikiriyacha Etam Mangala Muttama. Now slowly Buddha is going towards the end of the sutta, where now he is talking about more spiritual achievements. Tapocha Brahmacharyancha, austerity. So, sort of inclining ourselves towards more into the spiritual path, rather than always engulfed in the sensual gratification. How about leaning onto a different side? How about looking at a different angle? How about having a restrainment? How about observing precepts? So that is actually another upliftment to our lives, because otherwise we are simply floating, just going on without having any kind of a depth, without having any kind of a vision to our life. But when we start having some kind of a direction, when we feel that it is something useful, then actually it is giving us kind of a value to our life. So that is where tapo and brahmacharya, so having a celibate life, having a austere, kind of a little spiritual side to our life. So that is something as human beings which is quite necessary, because otherwise there is no much difference between us and the animals. So even though they may not have sophisticated vehicles and all these things, but they too, to some extent, do what the humans are doing. So how ourselves, the humans, are quite different from the animals. So one area of specification or the diversification is the spirituality. So we have the potential to uplift our mind, to take a different alternative path than the typical mundane attitudes. Finding food and eating, having sex, and all these things are quite mundane things even the animals are doing. But something different in us, in human beings, is to have that higher mind, have that higher goals, and exploring that spiritual achievements, going after, going kind of striving for that spiritual development. So for that, we have to have a certain amount of morality. So that is what particularly highlighted here. So rather than simply allowing the mind to get corrupted by various unhealthy type of activities, here we are selecting our path. We are narrowing down the path according to the Buddha's teaching. So he has laid down a kind of a rules and regulations, we can call them as precepts. And there we are trying to train ourselves. We are trying to restrain ourselves. Because the mind is talking various things, may suggest various things, which may be entirely harmful to ourselves, and which may be even quite harmful to the others. So if we simply blindly follow our instincts or our crazy mind, so then it is a real hazard. It's a real tragedy that we are doing to ourselves. So that is where we have to have some form of restraint according to the Dhamma, according to the precepts, that will give us a very safe passage, a safe journey. And Ariya Satchana Dasana, so once we are maintaining that kind of a restrainment, that is not the end. Now we have to strive for understanding. That is the practice. That is the vipassana. Ariya Satchana Dasana, seeing the noble truths. Nibbana Satchi Kriyacha. So as a result of that practice, now one realizes Nibbana. Etang Mangalam Uttama. Now one understands the path. A kind of a realization. That now one is fairly firm about one's path. So previously we are not much clear about it. And we are not enough. We don't have enough confidence about our own practice. But slowly, slowly, as we continue the path, so then we become more confident and we have experienced certain amount of release. We have experienced certain amount of good spiritual achievements. So slowly, we become more confident. We become thorough, well-established in the path. And there, now one becomes quite sure what to do. Even without someone else's support, now he is quite sure, okay, this is what I need to do. I am quite sure about it. I can do it. So has that firm assurance about one's own practice. So there we can say it's a great blessing. Even before, even more than the previous one, we can see how, what a blessing it is. Because one is quite sure about one's future path. Not mere economic achievements or anything, but rather how one is continuing one's practice. And then, interestingly, further Buddha mentioned, Puttasya loka dhammehi cittam yassana kampati asokam virajam khemam etam mangalam uttamam. Even after one has recognized the proper path, correct path, still it is unavoidable that we may have to come across various obstacles, various challenges, various difficulties. And it is common to the Arahants, common to the Buddha. Then how about us? So everyone has to go through these ups and downs, vicissitudes of the life. So when our lives are touched by these worldly conditions, ups and downs, how about maintaining the peace, maintaining the calmness, maintaining the relaxed attitude within ourselves? Puttasa loka dhammehi cittam yassana kampati. So you are not shivering, you are not wavering. So you have the endurance. Probably we may understood, okay, now the body is deteriorating. Body is going through a severe sickness. Or a loved one has passed away. So we understood the situation. It's a tragic situation, maybe a difficult situation. But how about maintaining certain amount of resilience so that we are able to come back to the normalcy as quickly as possible? So that is one very, very important part of the practice, the resilience. As we develop mindfulness, we should be able to quickly recover, quickly return back to the normal position, quickly come back to the home position. Maybe easy for one who, as a result of the practice, was able to achieve the released state of mind, who has recognized the released state of mind, non-grasping state of mind. So as much as possible, now his duty is to be there. Just be in that non-grasping state. So it becomes his tadi quality. It becomes his suchness. Again and again, returning to that state. so that one's mind is resting there. So that is, that becomes the home position of the mind. So even when that ups and downs of the life come across, so now he has a safe refuge that is nothing but that Thadi quality. To plunge into that non-grasping state of mind. So that is where Buddha's very higher quality is considered as the Thadi guna. Where whenever he goes through ups and downs, he has the capacity to stay in that home position, maintaining that suchness, and be in that original level, original point, or original line, the baseline. So in that sense, actually, that is something that we need to recognize. So even though we talk, even though we do, even though we act, so all those actions, all those ripples, all those activities, all those thoughts, all those words are very much like ripples in this peaceful state of the mind. They may be wholesome thoughts, they may be unwholesome thoughts, but they are merely thoughts. They are all conditioned phenomena. But they all happen or they all appear from the base, appear from the foundation, appear from the unconditioned. So there is a state of unconditioned mind. That is the baseline of the mind, form position of the mind. So that becomes kind of a refuge for us. Particularly when one develops vipassana, if one is able to recognize that, if one is able to rest there, and that would become a very good additional confidence for one to return back even when a lot of calamities, a lot of difficulties, various kinds of ups and downs happen in one's life. One understood that they are impermanent, they have the nature to come and go. They are appearing and then disappearing, but mind has that capacity to return back to that home position. So that's why Thadi Guna is highly appreciated. And then, Eta Disani Katvana Sabbatta Maparajita Sabbatta Sotting Gajjanti Tante Sammangala Muttamanti. So there Buddha concludes, those who have done these things are victorious everywhere. So now, as you all know, there are 38 blessings. So those who have at least some of them are victorious everywhere. Everywhere they go safely. Sambhatta Sottin Gacchanti. Everywhere they go safely and they are very much like confident. Theirs is that highest blessing. Now, so it is not that something that one is expecting from others, but these qualities are highly implanted in oneself. So one's heart is enriched with these good blessings. So then one's own life become a blessing to oneself. One is happy about oneself. One is quite happy about one's attitudes, one's own sila, one's own morality, and one's own endurance, and one's own good qualities, and one's direction, how one is continuing. So it's a kind of a innocent happiness that one may be developing. Not that one becomes conceited because of the practice, rather a kind of a innocent appreciation about what one is doing. Because that is also quite necessary, the kind of a positive, pleasant attitude towards oneself. It is not that we are encouraging oneself as a being, as an individual. Rather, one is continuing one's path, going towards the understanding, so that it is not the self that we are promoting, but rather we are more and more going towards the Dhamma. Opening up our hearts and going towards the Dhamma. So that is the growth happening. And about that one is happy. How I am giving up that ego. How I am giving up the selfishness. How I am more and more surrendering to the Dhamma, so that the Dhamma may enrich within the heart, or flower within the heart, become fruits within the heart. So I am allowing that process to happen. It's a very interesting process where Buddha mentioned, Dhammava dhamme abhisandeti, Dhammava dhamme paripureti, apara parang gamanayati. So those good qualities, those dhammata, those essential spiritual qualities are now approaching to the same dhammata, so that dhammata helping to cross from this shore to the other shore. Even though we start our practice as a person, as an individual, as a man, as a woman, so slowly, slowly practice help us to understand how we make a person, how we become a man, how we become a woman. So our practice help us to have that understanding. So then slowly, slowly, recognizing that futile nature of doing it, the effort that we are doing it to maintain that personality, to maintain that individuality. And once recognize that, it is a matter of slowly abandoning that, allowing Dhamma to flourish within us, allowing nature to continue within us, so that we are slowly, slowly crossing to the other shore. So it's a very beautiful way how Buddha encourages us, how he is showing us the path. And Mangala Sutta, in one sense, starting with very common or ordinary things, and ultimately taking us or leading us to the higher achievements, and ultimately it becomes the most worthy kind of or supreme kind of blessings we have. Okay, with that, I'd like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon, and now I'd like to open the session for questions.
Sarai Bande, we have 4 questions so far today.
Right.
Question number 1 of 4 is mindful sitting. Dear Bante, much merits for this valuable program and for your guidance throughout these years. My question is regarding the body scan, which I always do before sitting. I am used to the body scan to settle and establish mindfulness for a long time, and now I realize that the details I am observing are somewhat blurred and vague. I start at the top of my head and come down via face, and by the time I reach the shoulders, I only feel some vague sensations of hard and soft nature, warm and cold patches, etc. I want to find details and focus on each small area. I think I still can, but I can also continue with these vague sensations as well. Thought of checking with Bante if this is okay, or should I change the technique with metta? That's the end of the question.
I don't think that you need to change the technique, because it is our preference that it is you are talking, that you have certain preference to those sensations than to another category of sensations. So that is our own preferences. But if you are able to have a kind of open attitude, without having different preferences to different sensations, okay, that whatever comes, whatever appear, you are ready to observe, you are ready to investigate, so that your mind is quite open, quite receptive. So that would be more easier than selecting, okay, this is the type of sensations I am giving more priority, more importance than the other category. So rather than having that kind of a categorization, selection, so different sensations are happening, you are ready to observe. Whatever comes up, you keep close your attention and you do a thorough investigation, unbiased investigation. Another sensation happen, you keep your attention there, you do that thorough, unbiased investigation. So that actually gives us the proper understanding about the total behavior, rather than say selectively do the investigation. So therefore, I recommend, I encourage you to do a kind of an open investigation, keeping everything at the same level, accepting everything and including everything to the practice.
Question number two of five. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, I'm still a novice to the practice, but during day-to-day activities, I can observe how different thoughts come and go as a third person. When I observe any thought, example, angry thought, happy thought, lustful thoughts, or any thought, and complete the observation, once they are completely gone, I feel content and happy. If this happens for some time and I keep on observing thoughts come and go, some sort of a joy is available within that process as well. Hope Bhante can give more insights if these types of qualities can naturally arise, or am I just imagining and in a fantasy? Much merits. That's the end of the question.
Actually, as far as we can see, the fantasy is what you have seen, and as a result of the fantasy has gone, as a result of that, now you feel kind of a joy. So that is quite possible because the fantasies might causing some kind of a joy, but it is quite opposite also possible. Sometimes it may take us to sorrowful experiences, imagining various bad things. So therefore, the happiness that we derive through thinking is something that we can't depend on. But once we recognize it, once we penetrated that, so they may disappear. So mind become relaxed, mind become calm, inner chatter become less, and mind starts experiencing kind of an inner silence. Then you feel happy. You feel joyful. You feel satisfied. You feel contented. So that is a blessing. So that is a joy. So therefore, if you are able to have that, just encourage that. No problem. Slowly, actually, you don't need to attach to that, by the way. But at the beginning, having some kind of an appreciation towards that, encouragement towards that is necessary, because otherwise we can't establish ourselves there. First of all, we need to again and again arrive there and establish there. We need to recognize there. That state of mind has to be registered within our mind. For that, we need to dwell in there. Therefore, you can continue the path. Once that calming happens, just be in that calm state.
Question number three of five. It's mindful sitting, and we have a report from a child today, actually. I'm Tinuki, and I'm 14 years old. Today, I practiced a mindful sitting for about 1 hour. Despite lying on the bed, I was seated in a sitting position and observed what I felt behind closed eyes. My body was in an odd yet quite comfortable position. My head was against the headboard of the bed, and the rest of my body was laid on the bed while my knees were bent, leaving only the soles of my feet against the surface of the bed, while the rest of my body from hip on upwards in contact with the bed. My hands were intertwined with each other and were laid across my stomach. Once I began, I could feel my stomach rising and falling in a consistent manner, rising as I take a breath in through my nose and falling as I let it out in the same manner. This may have continued for a while before I started to feel an ache in my stomach, possibly because I had drunk my morning tea prior to this, which led me to breathe from my chest. Despite my hands still being on my stomach, I felt the rising and falling of my chest as I breathed. Occasionally, I could understand that I was losing my concentration because my mind would wander off to things like things that happened at school or a song that I had been listening to during the past couple of days. In the distance, I could even hear songs being blared from the distance. Once I identified it, I would bring back my concentration back to the breathing. I also have a question. Is there a way that I could reduce the number of times I lose concentration? Because it would be quite beneficial for studies, as I tend to lose concentration very often. With metta, that is the end of the question.
Right. So actually, I mean, you are in the method. So this is the method. So basically, as you are growing mindfulness, as a result of the grown mindfulness, you get the concentration as a result. At the beginning, mind is very much like distracted or scattered. So slowly, slowly, again and again, you are bringing your attention back to the rising and falling. So again getting distracted, again you are bringing it back. Again getting distracted, again you are bringing it back. It's a kind of a continuous process, appear like little difficult at the beginning, but slowly, slowly, a kind of a trend is developed within the mind. Now I need to stay at home. I need to stay within this process. So that is how the mind may look at it. So because the approach, the encouragement is to be in that experience. Rising and falling experience is the prominence, the area that we are trying to emphasize, the activity that we are trying to emphasize. So slowly, slowly, our attention is growing there, concentration is growing there, and ultimately, you may avoid any kind of, or the distractions become less and less, concentration become higher and higher at the abdomen. So you are able to recognize each rising, each falling consistently, continuously, with a higher precision, without any distraction. So that means your mind is concentrated. So therefore, you are in the correct path to develop concentration. That concentration is not the only, say, result. Later you can use it to develop wisdom also. But anyway, so this is a very interesting process that you are doing to develop concentration. Actually, you haven't write much about the walking practice. So that is another opportunity you have. So while walking also have that kind of a practice where your eyes simply glance in the path, and while various thoughts are coming, still you are trying to keep your attention at the sensations, at your foot, at your soles. Your foot is touching the ground. So that sensation becomes your priority. You are trying to keep your attention there. Again, mind wander, doesn't matter, but bring it back and keep your attention back into the soles. So likewise, again and again, you are gathering our attention. Ultimately, we understand, okay, now mind has restrained, mind has calmed down, and I can maintain my attention continuously on the selected process, that is the walking. So same approach you have to do in your studies. Say we are reading a book. So the develop concentration, so develop this exercise will help you to maintain your attention in that particular passage or in that particular sentence or whatever. So that you are able to maintain your attention there, have a fair amount of higher concentration, and your mind is well collected. As a result of that, you are able to be successful.
Question number 4 of 5. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, is there a connection between impermanence, anicca, and non-governability, anatma? Something like...
Yes.
So something like if everything is not permanent, they cannot be governed.
Exactly.
Much better. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, that is how Buddha also mentioned, yadanichang tandukkang. Tandukkang tadanatta. So, I mean, these things, all three are fairly interconnected. So the one unavoidable characteristic is this impermanent nature of the things. So whatever condition, so they are subjected to these characteristics. Arising, changing and passing away. Arising, changing and passing away. So it's a unavoidable circumstance. We can't stop that. So as a result of that, we can't have a non-changing soul or everlasting soul, everlasting anything, because everything is changing. Everything is going to arise and pass away. So that is a universal characteristic. So once we understand that universal characteristics, that impermanent nature, so there it completely abolish the wrong notion of a self, an everlasting self, a kind of a non-changing self, a kind of an essence, a core, is impossible because the changing nature is unavoidable. So therefore, the entry point to all these three is very much like the impermanence. So as we further develop impermanence, or as the understanding of impermanence develop, sometimes it may shift towards another angle. So that is where we understand, okay, everything is empty. So because there is no essence, there is no soul, there is no person, there is no individual, because everything is very much like transient.
Question number 5 of 5, this mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, today's guided sitting, I started observing the breath at the nostrils. Initially, I could recognize the touching sensations, hot and cold nature, volume of the breath, etc. After a few minutes, I could not recognize anything but the breath in and out, feeling like a fluid as a whole. I cannot explain that sensation, which rather felt like a thick rope going in and coming out of my nostrils. As per your guidance, I kept point of observation fixed and observed with patience. There was no distraction, and I felt calm and relaxed with these observations. I could remain mindful on this in and out sensation until the bell rang. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, it's okay. Basically, so this breathing can be perceived differently. So that's why at the beginning we get distracted and we don't have much about understanding. But later, as all the distractions are discarded, when we don't think about all the various other worldly matters, when our attention is fairly focused on breathing, now we start perceiving it as a different situation. Like, say, a thread being coming in and coming out. Or as you have mentioned, a kind of a rope being coming in and coming out. So likewise, our mind may interpret that subtle experience differently. That's all right. Now, say, for example, if we consider walking practice. At the beginning, with a lot of distractions and a lot of challenges, but later we understand, okay, now the body is capable of walking mindfully. Now I am maintaining my attention each and every step. Now that whole process appears like pedaling a bicycle, like rowing a boat or robo walking or something like that, because that the whole practice, whole experience become fairly simplified. So all the other distractions have discarded. So only this activity, just the walking activity become more emphasized, become more prominent. And that simple activity now mind look at from a different angle. It is very much like, say, pedaling a bicycle, very much like rowing a boat, or very much like a robo going from this end to the other end, coming from that end to this end. So likewise, a kind of an automatic process. That is how our mind may interpret the situation right now. So likewise, these are different stages that we go through in our practice. So it's a matter of continuation. Later, I mean, these perceptions also vary, change, and we need to pay attention more to the subtle sensations, those element characteristics, where we understand the subtle activities happening in this within this process.
Yes, so that is the last question we had for today. Right. Before we end the program, we have an announcement to make. So, we just want to let everyone know that from next time onwards, when we do the Dhamma Sermon, we are planning on basing the Dhamma Sermon on the book Concept and Reality in Early Buddhist Thought by Most Venerable Katukurunde Jnanananda Thero. So we will be reading out a section from the book and Bhante will explain it. So we are also seeking volunteers to read part of the book that is up for discussion on the day. So if anyone would like to participate, that he send us a message, and Bhante would like to add something about that. Can just share.
Actually, this is one of the very scholarly book, and as well as very interesting and very challenging book in a way, because the English available there is little difficult, and the Katukurunde Jnanananda Mahathero has used a fairly academic language there. But the content is very, very important. So that's why I want to discuss this book. And there is a translation called Sankalpe Sahayatarte. So that is something, the same translation made by the Most Venerable Katukurunde Bhante. So we can refer that as well. So I am combining both and trying to give a explanation to the points discussed in the book as much as I can. I can't say that I am capable to the level of Katukurunde Bhante. As much as I can, as much as how I understood, I am trying to explain. So we both are learning, because this is an area that we need to understand, and what is really happening within us, and how we are conceptualizing various things, and how we are ending up with suffering. So the thorough understanding of this book is an eye-opening thing, and a lot of suttas are also discussed within the book, and a lot of insights are available, and many things are there for us to ponder. So that's why I thought of discussing this book, giving a new direction to our program also. So that is why we have selected this book and trying to conduct that from next week onwards.
Yes, so I'll just share the link of the book on the chat. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's available in the seenthroughthenet.net, Most Venerable Katukurunde Mahathero's website, where the books and the what we call the Dhamma talks are available.
Okay. I just got this from the other, another place. I just put a link on the chat, but right. I will share that as well. So, so we can end the program today. To end the program, I would like to thank Bhante for his valuable time with all the programs at the monastery as well. And to all the supporters of this program, both seen and unseen, and all to all the participants for joining today for the practice and sharing their questions as well. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Teruvan sarnai.
Yeah, teruvan sarnai.